Welcome back to the podcast. This is Andre and Vanessa from Beyond the Room with Professor Simon Gilbody from the University of York. Simon, we've known for decades that people with severe mental illness die 15 years, 20 years younger than everybody else, and it hasn't improved. Why is that?
Well, I don't think there's been either the scientific basis to help us understand why that reduced life expectancy, that increased mortality exists, but neither has been the political or political will to understand that. So, and this seems to be shifting just in recent years. So, as you describe, Andre, you know, this reduced life expectancy amongst people who use mental health services, that's languished in the too difficult box. But I think there is a growing acceptance that the mind and the body have got to be understood in tandem, and the space that exists between physical and mental health is a really interesting, scientifically interesting, and clinically really important area. So this health gap that exists, we're now beginning to understand what the important drivers of that might be. And once we understand what some of the drivers might be, we can begin to think about how we might intervene for that. So that process, that developing a deeper understanding and then taking stock of the research that exists that might help us bridge that gap, close that gap, and then beginning to start to think about how we might innovate and how we might bring creative solutions to closing that gap. Very much about what we do in this Closing the Gap network. So we've not called it the Closing the Gap network by accident. It's right there. That's our central purpose, to try and reduce health inequalities for people who use mental health services. So that's what we do. So today's event is very much to celebrate and think more deeply about the interdisciplinary approaches that we might bring to understanding the nature of this problem. So the people who are helping us do that are people like myself, so people with a background as a mental health professional, but also an epidemiology and public health population science background. So that's one way in which we come into this. But we sit amongst a good group of people here at the University of York and in some of our partner organisations for this network who've got very different backgrounds from those which I have. So we've got really good environmental and geographical scientists. So they're really good at helping us understand how people who use mental health services, how they interact with their environments, you know, the ways in which they do or they don't use green space and physical activity. And there are loads of methods that we can borrow from elsewhere that have really come on in leaps and bounds over the last few years. So we want to innovate in this area to help understand people's levels of physical activity, what it is that stops them benefiting from some of the obvious attractions and opportunities afforded by the natural environment. So that's just a sort of quite a left field example of what we'll be doing within our Closing the Gap network and some of the considerations that we'll be looking at in this afternoon's session. So, so environmental solutions. We also want to understand this from an economic and a political perspective. So working within our network are very good social epidemiologists and political scientists who understand what the broader economic, social and environmental drivers are for health inequalities across the population more generally. So we know very well that social and economic disadvantage and the things that go with that, so poor and precarious housing, unemployment or precarious employment, and the grinding challenges faced by poverty day in, day out. The impact that has on your physical health and your mental health is true right across the population, but it's true in spades for people who use mental health services. So we don't shy away from some of the more challenging things that we might discover, and we seek to bring to bear economic and social epidemiological perspectives to think about what the drivers for health inequalities might in particular be for this section of the population. So we're very closely with my colleague, Professor Kate Pickett. She's not presenting this afternoon, but she's really written really important books about understanding the drivers of health inequalities in populations. She's got a best-selling book, The Spirit Level. So we're going to take those sorts of insights that Kate would bring. So that's one of the other ways in which we come to understand the health inequalities that exist and what the particular challenges might be for people who use mental health services. We also seek to understand some of the important drivers for poor health across the population that seem to be particularly amplified within this section of the population. So smoking is an important source of poor health across the population, but we know that smoking rates are much higher amongst people who use mental health services, and there are lots of reasons why that might be. But one of the broader successes that we've seen in the general population is the fact that population levels of smoking have come down year on year, such that the prevalence of smoking in the general population is now less than 15%. But amongst people who use mental health services, the prevalence of smoking is much higher. So why might that be? So we seek to understand what the drivers of smoking might be amongst people who use mental health services, and that helps us think about creative solutions and how we might use some of the things that we know work for the more general population, and how we might adapt effective interventions so that they really meet the needs of people who use mental health services. So this has enabled us to start to intervene for some of the important modifiable risk factors for poor health within the general population. So smoking's a good example of some of the early successes that we've had within our collaborative, but the other things that drive poor health within the general population also seem to be overrepresented in amongst people who use mental health services. So inactivity and obesity, really big problems about for drivers of poor health in the general population, but particularly relevant for people who use mental health services. And there are lots of important drivers for that. You know, we sit within what's sometimes called an obesogenic environment, where poverty sometimes drives you to use calorie-dense food, which is sometimes the cheapest form of food. It's really difficult to walk rather than to take passive forms of transport. Some of the food that's made available is not great, and we know that some of the side effects of psychotropic medications cause you to put weight on. So that's a really challenging area to work. So we're starting to begin to understand in some detail about the nature of the issues of weight and obesity amongst people who use mental health services, and we hope that in time that will enable us to build some interventions either at the individual level or the service level or at the population level that might be helpful in trying to mitigate the crisis and the epidemic of obesity and type 2 diabetes for this section of the population. So that's a really important contributor to poor health and health inequalities for people who use mental health services. We can't shy away from that, really challenging issues, but we know from our work in smoking, but by working and forming partnerships with people who use services, then you can begin to chip away and deepen your understanding, and in time come up with interventions by methods of co-production such that in time you can demonstrate the benefit of those interventions to help mitigate the health inequalities that exist. So lots of ways into this. So I've been speaking for a while now.
I just think it's brilliant. I'm really inspired by it, really. Just the two things in particular, the interdisciplinary focus that you've talked about, because we know for too long there's been much too much of a focus on sort of medical model and a very narrow definition around kind of what will what motivates someone to smoke or to go outside and walk and things like that. And I think the other thing for me is just the way that this works positively advocating for people with severe mental illness who normally just aren't part of the conversation at all. So the way that the research is co-produced, the way that people having a voice that they wouldn't have a voice traditionally, and the results that you're then getting by involving those people that are very different from some of the cultural assumptions that have been made for a long time. So it's not really a question, it's more of an observation on the work you're doing and why I think it's really important.
I think it's also really interesting that you talk about change at an individual level and a service level and a societal level. And I think obviously there's different interest in the parties that would make those changes. You know, government may be less interested, and I don't know, health services may be interested in some areas and not so much in other areas. It feels like the impetus has been with the individual for a long time with this question. You know, stop smoking, yes. Eat sensible food, exercise properly, come on. Whereas, in my mind, a lot of the harm that is being caused is coming from the system. People are being re-traumatised, or people are not getting access to services at all, or people are being, dosed up on all sorts of combinations of medication that they shouldn't be. And as an effect, physical health problems. So what should we be doing as a system? How should we be prioritising those system changes?
Really interesting, really challenging. A lot of public health focus, for better or for worse, just at the moment, just tends to focus on individual behaviour change. And whilst that's very powerful for individuals, as you say, Andre, that doesn't address some of the more fundamental, more entrenched, more difficult to shift drivers of poor physical health. And often that requires organisational and political will. So one of the things we're really keen to do is engage with decision makers to ensure that some of the research evidence that we identify or that we generate feeds into policy change. And so we work very closely with colleagues at the Equality Trust, and the Equality Trust have been very influential in taking some of the scientific observations about the drivers of health inequalities within the research community, and using that for leverage amongst political actors and policy makers. And they're helping us, going to help us do that with some of the work that we do within the Closing the Gap Network. So we're very much aware of how you change. We're very keen to learn about how you change things at that macro, at that policy, at that and political level. And we can see that that's really exciting, but also going to be really challenging. So it's going to be quite a journey. So we're keen to sort of let you know how we get on with that. So good luck with that. But, you know, we do see the political will to challenge the obesogenic environment just at the moment. We had the former chief medical officer talking in quite forthright terms about how we might tackle the epidemic of childhood obesity. And that's not just about telling kids to stop eating sweets. It's it's more challenging. So we take notice of some of the political will to ask difficult questions just at the moment. I remain optimistic that we might be able to effect change at that macro and that social and that and policy level. And but I'm fully aware of the challenges that might be entailed with that. So a really important part of our collaboration and our network are people who understand some of the drivers and some of the barriers that exist to change at that wider societal level. But I just wanted to pick up on some of the Vanessa said. So one of the things that we've been really keen to do is engage not just with traditional sort of academics, but also the colleagues that we've got within the network from the creative arts and humanities as well. So brilliant. We're in beautiful Yorkshire. I know we've got a few Yorkshire folk in the room today. So one of the jewels in the crown of the sort of Yorkshire cultural heritage is the Yorkshire Sculpture Park, for example. Yeah. So one of the nice local collaborations that we've encountered and are sort of willing partners are amongst people from such places. So we've got a strong partnership forming with Yorkshire Sculpture Park to try and think about how people who use mental health services might more readily access and feel more welcome in places that have got brilliant cultural milieu, but we're also surrounded in really beautiful countryside. Yeah. So finding ways that we can bridge that gap. So think of sort of, you know, the different multifaceted ways in which we might try to address health inequalities for this group. So we're coming at this from all angles. So it's not just hard numbers people like myself, but also people from the creative arts and cultural heritage community are also very keen to work with us, and they're acutely aware of the fact that sections of the population feel excluded from such cultural assets. So this is, you know, personally a very gratifying area for me to work in, and this way in which we form new partnerships is also very exciting. So we're keen to, you know, see how that develops and also track the benefits that might be afforded by such partnerships as well. So so yeah,
brilliant.
And people that are interested in the network, the Closing the Gap Network, tell us a little bit about what's happening with that. Have you got calls for funding out? How can people collaborate on projects?
Yeah, so we're just in our first year of a 5-year programme of research, and we are building the network just at the moment. So if you're interested in getting involved in the Closing the Gap Network, so have a look at our Twitter presence. So at CTG Network UK, and you've got some links in there to our website. If you want to join our network, find out more about what we do and hear about the events that we've got planned over the next couple of years, that would be the best portal to do that. You can get on our email list, and we do have funding calls come out periodically. We've got one that has just closed, and we've got another one coming up in 12 months where we we are custodians of not a huge amount of money, but and not insignificant amount of money to help people who want to do more research and engagement in this area. If you come to us with good ideas, then we can help you work those up into scientifically plausible pieces of work that will generate new evidence and it will enable us to go in new directions in this area. So we're really excited about the funding calls that are coming around Closing the Gap Network, and in time using this as a platform and a forum by which we communicate some of the good work that we identify in this area, but also the new work that becomes enabled by the network. So we see this as a journey, and we're just at the beginning of that journey. And you know, by the end of 5 years, we hope there'll be a legacy, new research, and a connected community of people who are also interested in looking at innovative solutions to reducing health inequalities in this population.
Brilliant, really exciting work. It's great to see it happening here in York. Brilliant. Thanks a lot for sharing it with us.
Good, thank you very much.
Thank you.